Now shall we turn to our passage in the book of Genesis? And as you know, it is Genesis chapter 32. The 32nd chapter of the book of Genesis. And we are going to read from the 22nd verse. And he rose up that night and took his two wives and his two women servants and his 11 sons and passed over the ford Jabbok. And he took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that he had. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaketh." And he said, "I will not let thee go, except thou bless me." And he said unto him, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel, for as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed." And Jacob asked him and said, "Tell me, I pray thee, thy name." And he said, "Wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name?" And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for "I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved." And as he passed over Penuel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. Therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew that shrank. Now may the Lord graciously bless to us the reading of his word this evening. Those of you who were present last Sunday evening will remember that our subject was the episode of chapter 28 in the book of Genesis. And now we have this other episode in chapter 32. We saw in our meeting that it was at Bethel, as recorded in that 28th chapter, that Jacob got to know God. And now here we have an experience which took place just about 20 years later. You know, Jacob must have known the Lord for a period of about 70 years. And if you read through the chapters, you will find that his life as a saint is divided up into a number of parts. Now, I would say that we have here the first part of his life as a saint. It begins in chapter 28 and it ends in chapter 32. And it covers a period of just about 20 years. Now you'll notice that at the beginning of the 20 years, he had an experience by night. And then at the end of the 20 years, he had another experience by night. And on each occasion he met with God and had personal dealings with him. So I think that we have here a very clearly defined period in the life of the patriarch Jacob. On the one hand, we have the night scene when he was given that vision. And here's another night scene in which he meets with this heavenly visitor. Now I want to remind you of what I said last Sunday evening about this man. I said that Jacob meant well. Jacob, in his heart of hearts, was sincere. He wanted the blessing of God. But in Jacob, really, there were two men. There was the inner man, and then there was the outer man. And the outer man that you see as you read through these chapters, chapters 25 and 26 and 27 and 28, right through to chapter 32, the outer man is anything at all but what you would want him to be. There's something not nice about him. And his own brother could discern that. And he said to his father, Father, is he not well called Jacob? He said, he is. He's well called because he is crooked. There's a crookedness in him. His life was not at all what it ought to have been. Outwardly, his life was ugly. And he was characterized by a kind of meanness all through. And yet God saw that at the heart of all, that there was something genuine, there was something real. That is, in his very heart he did appreciate divine things. And he wanted to be right for eternity, and he wanted to live for God. And so God, what could God do with a man like that? Now, that's what I want you to see. God took Jacob, and God put Jacob into school. And he put him into school in order that he might learn certain things by experience. He had a great deal to learn. It would seem that there was no other way by which he could learn. Only by experience. And you know, it is a saying that experience keeps a dear school, but fools will learn in no other. And you and I, who are the Lord's this evening, we should make up our minds to learn in the other school. And is there another school, you say? Oh, there is. It's the school of grace, of which we read in Titus 2, the school of grace. You can learn in that school. And if you learn in that school, it will be well for you. And this, the golden rule there is obedience. Obey God. Just take God at his word. Don't be asserting your own will. Don't be questioning God's will. But do what God tells you to do. And say what the Lord tells you to say. Learn to walk with him. Learn in the school of grace. But if you are a bit disobedient and stubborn in your nature, well then, the Lord, though he doesn't want to do it, and though it doesn't give him any pleasure, for we are told that he doth not willingly grieve the children of men, the Lord will have to take you and put you to school. And if the Lord puts you into the school of experience, then in that school you will learn in the hard way. Now, God wanted to bring out the best that was in Jacob, because God saw it there. It was latent. God could see it, and God wanted to bring it out. And God wanted those old, ugly corners that were on his life, he wanted them all rubbed off. He wanted to get them all taken away. And so God put him into the school of experience in order that by hard experience he might learn, in order that he might be a better man for God, a happier man in his own soul, and a brighter testimony for the Lord wherever he went. And so when you leave chapter 28, then you see Jacob in school. Now, what were the lessons that he learned in these 20 years? And please remember that when you come to the end of chapter 32, that's not the end of his schooling by any means. He had many more lessons to learn. But we are thinking only of this one period in his life. And what were some of the lessons, at least some of them, that he learned during these 20 years in God's school of experience? Well, one lesson that he learned was this, and this was a very precious one. He learned that his God was just as good as his promise. God was as good as his promise. You know, when the Lord appeared to Jacob in chapter 28, he didn't make any conditions with Jacob. The Lord appeared to him in sovereign grace, and he said, I will bless thee, and I will keep thee, and I will be with thee, and I will feed thee, and I will bring thee back again. That's what God promised. And what did Jacob say? Well, Jacob, he made a vow, and here's how his vow began. If God will be with me. Notice that. The big if. Poor Jacob. If God will be with me and will keep me in the way that I go and will bring me again to my father's house and will give me bread to eat and raiment to wear. That's all that he wanted. Just wanted bread, as much bread as would keep him alive and as much clothing as would cover him. That's all that he wanted. That's all that was all he evidently thought that God could do. Oh, how low was his appreciation of the God that had met him. All he expected God to do for him was give him bread and give him clothing and keep him from being killed and bring him back again. That's all he wanted God to do for him. And he struck the bargain. It began with if, that big if of his, if. How did it turn out afterwards? How did it turn out? Well, when you come over to chapter 31, you can look at chapter 31 if you like, at chapter 31 and at verse 5. He said, the God of my father hath been with me. And then in verse 42 of the same chapter, except the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac had been with me. You notice he acknowledges now at the end of 20 years that God has kept his word. God has been with him. Although, mind you, he acted very wrongly during those 20 years. Yet God had been with him. God had kept his promise. God had been faithful to his word. He learns that. That was one great lesson for him to learn, wasn't it? And did God give him bread to eat? And did God give him raiment to wear? Look what he says in chapter 32, will you please? Chapter 32. I am not worthy, he says, of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servants. That's what God did for him. That was more than bread to eat and raiment to wear. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I'm become two bands. Look, he says, look what I have. You see that band there? You see that army there? That belongs to me. And you see that other army over there? That belongs to me too. I have acquired these during the 20 years that I have been in God's school of experience. You see what God has done for me. Oh, God had given him far more than bread to eat and raiment to wear. Why? He was coming back again a rich man, with flocks and with herds and with children and with men servants and with women servants. Come at two bands, so many that he had to divide his company into two parts. Oh, that was the God that he had. He learned that by experience. He learned the faithfulness and the goodness of God to him during those 20 years. And you know, dear young people, the promise that was given to Jacob, first of all, is the very promise that was given to the Hebrews. I am with thee. I will never, never leave thee nor forsake thee. Hebrews 13. That's the promise that was given originally to Jacob, and that's the promise that comes down to you and me living today in the year 1965. The very same promise. Oh, that we could this evening, that we could, and that all you dear young people, as I look around and see all these young faces, oh, if you dear young people could only lay hold upon this, that God is as good as his word, that he's a good God. He's not an austere man. No, no, he's a good God, a giving God. And if you trust in him, you can count upon it. He'll give you far more than bread to eat and raiment to wear. That's one lesson that Jacob learned. But we must pass on quickly. He learned a second lesson. You know, what was the trouble way back in chapter 25 and in chapter 27? Because in those chapters he acted wrongly. He took his brother's birthright from him. And then in chapter 27 he went into his father and he took his father's blessing from Esau. Why did he do that? Oh, it was all right for him to wish to have blessing. That was a good thing. But what was the trouble with him? Why couldn't he trust in God? Well, the trouble was this. He couldn't wait. He couldn't wait. If only he had waited, God would have given him all that was in his heart to give him. Of course he would. Yes, that God loved him.
one of the minor prophets tells us that God loved him. Jacob have I loved, it says, and God would have given him everything. He would. But the trouble was this, that Jacob couldn't wait for it. He couldn't wait God's time. And because he couldn't wait God's time, he had to begin and work and scheme and plan for himself. How like ourselves. Oh, there are times that we do the same thing, don't we? We're in some difficulty, perhaps, and we begin to plan and to scheme. We don't leave it all with God and trust Him to bring about the right. No, like Jacob, we begin to plan and to scheme. That's what Jacob did. Jacob couldn't wait. Jacob hadn't the patience to trust. Oh, get hold of that, dear young people. You must wait upon God. You must have patience. Patience is a virtue, and God wants you to cultivate that virtue. You'll never cultivate it unless you put it into action. And so God sends trials in order that you might learn to have patience and patiently to wait upon Him. Well, the second lesson that Jacob learned was this. He learned to wait. You say, how did he learn to wait? Well, I'll tell you how he learned to wait. When he went to Laban's home, Laban had two daughters, and they were both very nice young ladies. But one of them was particularly attractive to Jacob, and that was Rachel, and he fell in love with her right away. He fell in love with Rachel. He wanted Rachel. And for Rachel, he served 7 years. That was a long time, wasn't it? I'm sure every time he saw her, as he went about the farmyard, or as he went about doing his work, I'm sure every time he saw Rachel, he would long and say, oh, I just wish the time had come when Rachel would be mine. He waited 7 years. And then at the end of 7 years, he was going to get her. But then, old Laban, he played a trick on him, you remember. And what was the result? The result was he had to serve another 7 years for Rachel. He waited 14 years. Oh, yes, you see, he's learning in the hard way. God will give him a good wife, the wife that he wants, but God says, Jacob, I'm going to teach you the lesson that you need to learn. And that lesson is that you must have patience. You must learn to wait. You couldn't wait when you were at home and you did wrong. But now you're saved and you're mine. And I'm going to put you into my school now, and I'm going to teach you the hard way. And that was the hard way for Jacob, wasn't it? It surely was. Yes, he had to wait, and he waited 14 years before he got his Rachel. He got her then, all right, but he had to wait 14 years. Do you know one of the last things that Jacob said before he died? I think it's very interesting. Way over in chapter 49, he said this, I have waited for thy salvation. Well, you say, what's the significance of that? Simply, that all his life God had been teaching him to wait on God, and when he comes to the end almost, he has learned the lesson well, and he says, I have waited for thy salvation. Oh, I do trust that God will make this a blessing to you here in this meeting. My dear young brother and dear young sister, you have started out on the Christian life. You're maybe saved 2 or 3 or 6 years, and you're still comparatively young as a Christian, and it will do you good if you learn this lesson. Wait upon God. Don't become impatient. Oh, wait, my brother. Wait, my sister. God's time will come. He knows what's in your heart. He knows the desires that are there, the longings that are there. He wants you. He knows what you want to do for Him. Maybe you want to go away to be a missionary or to do something else for Him, and you feel that God has put it in your heart, but the way is not opening up, and you're becoming wearied maybe, and you're losing heart. Oh, my dear brother, my dear sister, wait patiently upon the Lord. They that wait upon the Lord, Isaiah says, they shall mount up with wings. Yes, learn to wait upon the Lord. Jacob learned that lesson. That's the second lesson that I want to suggest. But then he learned another lesson. He learned this lesson, that we reap in this life, we reap exactly what we sow. Now that's another hard lesson, that we reap exactly what we sow. You see Jacob sowing in chapter 25 and again in chapter 27. And then you see him reaping in the subsequent chapters. Now when he was sowing, you remember,
that he deceived and he cheated his brother. He did both. He deceived him and he cheated him. And when he came to Laban, Laban deceived and cheated him, because he complained to his wives, saying, "Your father hath changed my wages these 10 times. Yes, Laban deceived and cheated him. Reminding us of the scripture that whatever a man sows, that shall he also reap. The emphasis is upon the that. That shall he also reap. You'll reap whatsoever you sow. Now learn that lesson, dear young Christian. And learn it now, and it will do you good. Remember that you are going to reap what you sow in this life. I want to pass on as quickly as possible and come to another lesson that he learned. He learned this. He learned to respect the rights of others. You know, he should have respected the rights of his brother Esau. And he should have respected his rights. Because that Esau was the firstborn. Oh yes, they were twins, but Esau was born first. And Jacob should have respected his rights and his feelings as being the firstborn. But he didn't. He didn't do that. And now God's going to teach him. And God puts him into the school of experience. And he learns in that school, he learns to respect the feelings and the rights of others. May I wish that all of us could learn this lesson. You know, you have your feelings. Well, remember, other people have their feelings too. And you like people to respect your feelings. Well, then you ought to respect their feelings. Oh yes. Now Jacob, he didn't respect the rights or the feelings of the firstborn, and so God put him into school. And here's what happened. He serves 7 years for Rachel, and at the end of the 7 years, Rachel's daddy, he has a big feast, because this is the day of the wedding. The wedding takes place and there's a big feast and everything goes well, and then it has always been a kind of a mystery to me how Laban did this, but he did it anyhow. Jacob had decided that he would spend his honeymoon at home. He wasn't going to go away on a honeymoon for a week or a month. He was just going to spend his honeymoon at home. And the night came, the first night after his marriage, and we are not told where he and his bride were to spend it, whether in the same home as Laban or in a home nearby. We're not told. But Laban, he was a very, very clever gentleman. And instead of giving Jacob Rachel to be his wife, he gave him Leah. And Jacob didn't know about it till the next morning. Now you might, I don't want to make you smile, mind you. I want to, but I have to say this, because this is what we are told in the passage. And you say, how could that possibly be? Well, it may have been the custom then for the bride to be heavily veiled. And she was given to Jacob, and of course you must remember that in those days they hadn't any electric light as we have now. and Leah and Rachel, they were sisters, and we know that in Luke's they weren't so like each other, because we are told that Leah, she had very tender eyes. But it may be that their voices were very much alike. But anyhow, the next morning when Jacob awoke, what did he discover? He discovered that it wasn't Rachel he had at all, it was Leah. And he was terribly displeased about it. And I'm sure before he took any breakfast at all, he went to Laban. We know the passage tells us that he went right to Laban about it. And he told Laban, he said, What's this you have done on? What kind of a trick is this you have played on me? Don't you know very well that it was Rachel that I loved? It was Rachel that I wanted. And you deceived me.
And you palmed Leah on him. I didn't want Leah. And Laban turned to him and he said, now look, he said, it's a custom in our country, that the younger must never be given in marriage before the firstborn. The firstborn, the rights of the firstborn are such in our country that she must be given in marriage first. You can't say anything, Jacob. That's a custom, a standing custom in this part of the country. It must be, they must be the firstborn first. And so Jacob felt very sore about it. But Jacob would say to himself, well, I'm learning it in a very hard way now. I have to respect the rights of the firstborn. I didn't respect the rights of my firstborn brother, but God is teaching me a lesson that I must respect the rights of others. And it was a hard lesson, wasn't it? Now, wouldn't it be good for us to learn the same lesson, but to learn it in the school of grace? Learn to respect the rights and the feelings of others. Now we have to pass on quickly because our time is almost up. He learned another lesson, and it is this. He learned that God requireth that which is past. God requireth that which is past. You see, when he was at home with his father, he went in before his father, and his father asked him his name, and he said Esau, and he told a lie. He said he was Esau. And now at the end of these 20 years, he meets the angel of the covenant, and he wrestles with him. And he says to the angel, he says, bless me. He wants blessing. He had always been wanting blessing. He wanted blessing in chapter 25. He wanted it in chapter 27. And now he wants it again in chapter 32. Bless me, he says. And the angel of the covenant asked him a very simple question. He said to him, what is thy name? What is thy name? You see the significance of it. That was the very question that his father had asked him 20 years before. And he had deceived his father. And he said to his father, my name is Esau. And he lied to his father. And now God just brings him back. 20 years. And God brings him right back to where he had gone wrong. And God says to him, now what's your name, Jacob? Or he didn't say Jacob. He said, what's your name? What's your name? And what does he say? When he's asked his name, he says, Jacob, Jacob. He has learned a great lesson. He can't deceive God. God requires that which is past. God requires that which is past. And he admits that he is Jacob. He admits that. And when he admits that, it says that God blessed him there. And he learned another great lesson. He learned this lesson, that all the dealings of God with him were to make him a princely man. That was what it was all, to make him princely, because God gave him a new name, and the new name was Israel, a prince of God. God wanted to make him a prince among men. But before he could be a prince among men, the old Jacob characteristics had to be shed. They had to go. They had to die. And that was why God put him all through these grueling experiences. To teach him that the flesh profiteth nothing. To teach him that his natural energy as a man, it counted nothing at all in the things of God. And that was why the angel put his hand on his thigh and put his thigh out of joint. That was as much as to say, now Jacob, any time in the past that you got into a bit of trouble, you ran away. You got into a quarrel at home with Esau, and then you ran away. And you got into a quarrel with Laban, and then you ran away. And I want you to understand now, Israel, for he's now Israel, I want you to understand that the days of your running away are over. And from that day onward, Jacob was a different man. He was a different man. And we are told that he crossed over the brook. And I want you to notice that he's given a new start. He gets a new start. My God is very gracious. If we have failed in the past, we can have a new start. And now we have come to the end of the old year. And wouldn't this be a good time, brethren and sisters, for all of us, young and old? Wouldn't this be a good time for us to take stock? And wouldn't this be a good time for us to learn the lessons that God wants to teach us? And if we are prepared to learn them, God wants to give every one of us a new start. Soon it will be 1966. It's a time, this, of resolutions. There's no wrong at all in making a resolution. By all means, make a resolution on your bended knees and ask God to make you a prince among men, to make you an Israel of God, and God will do it. God is good, and God gives his people a new start. He here gives Jacob a new start. And from this point onward, Israel, because we should call him Israel now, Israel, he has a new walk. And you have only to look at him and see, he walks now with a limp. There's a new walk. He has had dealings with God, and to the day that he dies, he carries with him the marks that he received that night that he had dealings with God. A new start, and a new walk, and a new name. Yes, Israel, a prince of God. That's his name. And as he comes across the brook, we are told that the sun rose upon him. You know, in chapter 28 it says the sun set upon Jacob. But now the sun rose upon him, so that the new day was opening out in his life. Isn't that beautiful? And more than that, he had a new appreciation of God. And I think that's the most important of all. He say, called the brook Peniel, for he said, I have seen God face to face. What did he call the place in chapter 28? He called it Bethel. And Bethel is the house of God. The house of God, that's the place. But now he calls this place, he calls it Peniel, that is the face of God. In the one case, he's occupied with the place, and in the other case, he's occupied with the person. He has seen God face to face. And he has a deeper and a truer and a greater appreciation of the greatness and goodness of his God. Oh, it's blessed to know the place. But you remember, Judas knew the place. But though Judas knew the place, he didn't love the person. But here is Israel. And Israel, as a true prince of God, he says, I have seen the face of God. And he loves the person. A greater appreciation of the goodness and the grace of God. I trust that that will be ours as we step out in a few days' time into 1966. May God grant that it may be so. There is not time in our meeting to go right on over to the end of Israel's life. But when you come to the end of his life, you see how princely he was. How princely he was. His last days were his best days. And may it be so with every one of us for his name's sake.